This is a reading of the book by Rudolf Steiner entitled A Way of Self-Knowledge and The Threshold of the Spiritual World. It's actually two of his works put together. I'm reading the last section of A Way of Self-Knowledge entitled Meditation 8, Beholding Your Previous Earthly Lives. When the soul's journey into suprasensory worlds is undertaken properly, one cannot really speak of dangers. If the instructions given to the soul were dangerous to human beings, such a journey would not serve its purpose. This purpose is always to strengthen the soul, to gather its powers, so that we can bear the experiences we must undergo if we wish to behold and understand worlds other than the sensory world. In the suprasensory worlds, beholding, perceiving, and understanding have a different relationship to one another than they do in the sensory. This is an essential difference between the two worlds. Someone who hears something about a part of the sensory world legitimately feels that he or she can fully understand what is said only through the personal experience that perception provides. People believe they have to see a landscape or a painting to understand it. On the other hand, you can thoroughly grasp the suprasensory worlds simply by accepting an accurate description of them with unprejudiced judgment. To grasp and experience all the life-supporting, life-fulfilling powers of the spiritual worlds, a person needs only a description from someone who can see those worlds. Only those who are in a position to observe outside the physical body can attain true cognition of such worlds. In the end, descriptions of the spiritual world must always derive from observers. But grasping what they report allows a soul to gain insights into those worlds. It is quite possible, therefore, for those who have no insight themselves into the spiritual worlds to fully understand those worlds and their characteristics. They will understand them as, in accordance with the disposition of their souls, they will and must. Hence we may take the themes for our meditative absorption from the rich store of ideas we have gathered for ourselves about the spiritual worlds. This is the best kind of material for absorption and leads most surely to the acquisition of spiritual vision. It is often believed that understanding other people's cognitions of the spiritual worlds before one has oneself achieved direct cognition of them is an obstacle to the development of one's own supersensory vision. But this does not reflect the facts. On the contrary, you will achieve supersensory vision more easily and certainly if you have previously understood some content of supersensory vision than if you have not. Whether someone stops at simply understanding or continues to strive toward actual supersensory vision depends upon whether the thirst for personal observation has arisen. Should that desire exist, one can do nothing other than seek the opportunity to truly set forth upon the journey into the supersensory worlds. Beginning in our own time, more and more people will wish to understand the supersensory worlds. True observation of human life shows that starting in our time, human souls have entered a condition in which they cannot enter into the necessary relationship to life without understanding the supersensory worlds. Once your soul's journey has progressed so far that you carry within you as memory all that you call, quote-unquote, yourself, that is, your being in the sensory world, and you experience yourself in a newly attained higher I, you will be able to behold your life's course beyond earthly existence. The reality will then arise before your spiritual gaze that existence in the spiritual world precedes existence in the sensory world, and that the true causes of the formation of sensory existence lie in that spiritual existence. You will learn that before you received a sensory perceptible body and entered this earthly life, you already lived a purely spiritual life. You will see how the person you are now, with your capacities and instincts, was prepared in a previous existence in a purely spiritual world. You will see yourself living as a spiritual being before you entered the sensory perceptible world. In the sensory world, you strive to live as a sensory being, with soul capacities and qualities that you have borne with you and unfolded from birth. But it would be a mistake to ask how you could have desired capacities and tendencies that may now seem so unpleasant. It makes no difference whether or not something pleases the soul in sensory life. The nature of the soul's aspiration in spiritual life is very different from what it is afterward in earthly life. The ways of knowing and willing are quite different in each world. In spiritual existence, you know that to develop fully you need an earthly life. You also know that during that earthly life, your soul may run its course in an unlikable or crushing manner. Yet you strive toward earthly life, because during spiritual existence, you pay little attention to what is likable and comfortable. There, you concern yourself only with what you need to unfold your being properly. The same is true of your destiny in life. You look at what you like or dislike, and you see how you prepared for these during your spiritual existence. You see how you yourself provided the means that then caused you to experience this joy or that pain on earth. So long as we experience ourselves only in sensory existence, we find it incomprehensible that we ourselves caused this or that situation. And yet the fact is that, when we were in spiritual existence, we had what we might call a suprasensory insight, saying to ourselves, quote, "I must go through these painful or unlikable things, because only these experiences will advance me to the next stage in my whole development." Unquote. Mere opinions formed on the basis of the experience of sensory life will never allow us to recognize how far earthly human life takes us in our overall development. Cognition of a spiritual existence preceding earthly existence provides the reasons for your striving during your spiritual existence for a particular earthly life and destiny. These reasons lead back to your earlier earthly life. The experiences you had and the capacities you gained during the course of that life will cause you, during the following spiritual existence, to wish to improve upon those incomplete experiences and to develop those yet undeveloped capacities in your next earthly life. For example, in spiritual existence, you may feel so deeply about an injustice you did to someone that you feel you have disturbed the cosmic order and need to live again with that person in another earthly life to correct the injustice. As you develop further, your view will expand to include a series of previous earthly lives. In that way, you can understand through observation the true life course of your superordinate I. You see that human beings pass through the totality of their existence on earth by means of repeated lives, and that in between those lives there run purely spiritual lives systematically connected with the earthly lives. In this way, cognition of repeated earthly lives is made available to accurate observation. To counteract repeatedly occurring misunderstandings, I should mention something that is described in greater detail in my other works. The totality of a human existence does not develop in such a way that life repeats itself eternally. A certain number of repetitions occur, but these are preceded and followed by quite other kinds of existence, while the course of existence itself in its totality shows itself to be a wisdom-filled developmental process. The knowledge that human beings evolve and develop through repeated lives can also be acquired by reasoned observation of sensory existence. In my books titled Theosophy and titled An Outline of Esoteric Science, as well as in other smaller works, I have attempted to give proof of repeated earthly lives and their interrelations in a form appropriate to modern science and in accord with current theories of evolution. In these works, I tried to show how consistent thinking and investigation, when it really takes scientific research to its logical conclusion, must lead logically to formulating the modern theory of evolution in such a way that the essence of what is to be human the individual nature of the human soul, is seen as something that evolves by passing through repeated earthly lives and intervening lives that are purely spiritual. The evidence presented in those books could, of course, be extended and made conclusive. Nevertheless, even without this, I believe it is legitimate to believe that proofs in the realm of the spirit have the same scientific value as other scientific proofs. There is nothing in spiritual science that cannot be supported by evidence similar to that used in natural science. I must admit, however, that it is quite obviously much more difficult for spiritual scientific proofs to achieve recognition than it is for proofs in the natural sciences. This happens not because spiritual science lacks rigor, but because the people to whom its proofs are presented do not feel the basis in sensory facts that make it easy for them to agree with natural scientific proofs. But that has nothing to do with the strength of the proofs. Anyone who is in a position to compare natural scientific proofs with spiritual scientific proofs in an objective, impartial manner will be easily convinced that the latter have the same value as the former. Thus, to what an observer of the spiritual worlds can describe of repeated earthly lives, we may add the force of what we can give as supporting proof. The one can help the other, so that by understanding alone, we can be convinced of the reality of the repetition of the whole human life cycle. Here, we have attempted to show a path that ascends beyond understanding alone to the supersensory vision of this repetition. That's the end of Meditation 8. And there is an afterword that will come after this.